This is Todd Lights, public address announcer for your Los Angeles Dodgers. And now, it's time for the Bleed Los podcast with your hosts Alonso and Juan.
And Alicia del Valle.
With the baby face gimmick in the sky, Roger.
Hola, damas y caballeros, and welcome to another edition of the Bleed Los podcast. This week's podcast is presented by our partners at BetOnline. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all of your favorite sports, contests, and events with first-to-market odds and lines. Find reviews and news for every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all of your sports info, from live in-game betting, props, and futures. If you head on over to BetOnline today and make your first sports bet, if you use our promo code BLEAV50, BLEAV50, you will receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Joining us this week in the carne asada is the actor, comedian, producer, creator. Also, I mean, this dude's resume is increasing in it, and it's a funny-ass show, too. Hulu's This Fool, Chris Estrada. Chris, how you doing?
Good, Alonso. Thanks for having me. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, thank you for having us. The thing that that stood out to me when I looked up, you know, because I always like to look online, you know, for the descriptions of the show. Julio Lopez, a punk-ass bitch with the heart of gold who goes out of his way to help everyone but himself. That might be my most favorite descriptor of any TV show.
That's my least favorite descriptor.
It's on IMDb. That's how they have it.
I know. I've been meaning to change it.
The show's loosely based on your life, so I know there's a lot of that Seinfeld, you know, kind of comparison, yeah. Which, you know, it's in some cases not fair, but I've been curious, when you hear someone say their show is loosely based on their life, how loosely based on your life is this show?
You know, a lot of it loosely based in, like, not everything is 100% my life. It was things inspired by other elements, but, like, loosely, it's sort of like, you know, I grew up with a single mom. I live with my grandma. I have two sisters. I had older cousins that were gang members. It takes place in South Central. I grew up in Inglewood and South Central. So taking those elements, injecting a little bit of my personality into the character, and, you know, kind of thinking of my character of, like, where would I be if I wasn't doing stand-up comedy, and kind of thinking, like, this is probably where I would be at, like, in life, you know? So thinking about it that way. And kind of letting my personality and sort of, like, some of my history dictate what the show is and whatnot.
No, it's a great show. And then, you know, with your cast, if you will, that joins you. Frankie Quinones is on the show. Mm-hmm. Hilarious guy.
Yeah. Yeah,
if you've seen the Cholo Fit Creeper stuff, that's Frankie Quinones. But also, the thing I like about you, not even just from this show, right, but you talk about it in your stand-up. Mm-hmm. As someone that is also forklift certified, I like how you kind of, you know, talk about that stuff and the realness of it too, right? You still had a real job up until this show got picked up, and you were still doing the thing. So I wanted to ask you, when the surrealness of it, I know you've talked about, but has it really hit you yet that this is kind of, this is what I'm doing now?
It trips me up because, like I said, I was working. I was a stand-up comedian. I've been a stand-up comedian for the last 8 to 9 years here in L.A. and then doing shows on the road and whatnot. But it wasn't until the last, like, maybe in the last few months, in the last month since the show's been out, people will recognize me. And that's kind of a trip, like, because I forget. I still have the confidence of a forklift driver, where I'm just like, emotionally, I'm still there, you know, or emotionally, I still work at a warehouse, but I forget that people that know the show and watch it. So sometimes I walk around like I have a regular fucking job, you know, like I walk around like I have a regular job, forgetting that, you know. And I think a lot of it is because when we were writing the show, and then I acted in the show, and then I wasn't done. We edited the show. I was part of the editing process. So it's been work the whole time. So I really do forget. It's weird when people recognize me and I go, oh, yeah, I guess I am on a TV show. Like, I forget about it.
Oh, yeah.
Non-forklift certified Alicia Lavalle here, who has not also had a regular, just regular fucking job like you were talking a minute ago. Because people stop her all the time. You would be surprised. Yeah. Like, we'll be out and about, and people just randomly stop her. And she even says to herself, I haven't been on news in forever, and she still gets stopped all the fucking time.
L.A. legend.
Actually, that is a great way to bring up what I wanted to discuss. Mm-hmm. Alonso is correct. I have a very loyal, very small following from my days doing morning news, many years doing morning news. And before that was morning radio. I feel like there is a thirst, a hunger for more representation. And I don't want to turn this into a TED talk, but there aren't enough Latino sitcoms out there compared to all of us out here, right? Our buying power, our voting power. You got your own show, Chris Estrada. You know how badass that is? I mean, like, that is, so when I saw the advertisements for this fool, I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. What is this? Because there are others who have tried and taken a script and taken someone's story, because this is your story, Chris Estrada, and ruined it. Right? It could have been something great, but no, yours is authentic. And I don't throw that word around loosely. Oh, it's authentic. It's like hella funny. And you cover topics that might be taboo to others outside of LA, and you still make it universally appealing. So kudos to you first. Happy Hispanic Heritage Latinx Chicano month. And how did you get your own show? And Fred Armisen to produce it. Tell me that process from doing stand-up on the road, having a day job, and now you have your own show.
Man, that started a long time ago. That started in 2018. I was doing stand-up here in Los Angeles, and I knew these comedians named Jake Weissman, Matt Ingebretson, and Pat Bishop. They had their own show on Comedy Central, and that show was called Corporate. And it was a really dark, like, office comedy show. And those fools hit me up. One day I was working at my warehouse job, and then I got a text from Jake, and he was like, hey, we produce stuff now, and we showrun our own show. Would you be interested in working in something with us? And, you know, I was doing stand-up at night, but like I said, stand-up doesn't pay until it pays, so I still had a regular job, like, Monday through Thursday, Monday through Friday. So I said, yeah, let's meet up. And then I met up with them. And then they were like, what ideas do you have, or what do you want to talk about? And they were sort of the guiding light in this. They said, why don't you write about from where you come from? Like, you're part of LA. And I was like, all right, cool. And, you know, think about some of your family. And we really like film a lot. So we're all like film buffs. So we love movies by the Coen brothers and stuff like that. So we were like, let's make it look really cinematic. And then I said, all right, cool. And then I kind of told them, I said, I don't want to touch on anything too woke. Like, I'm not trying to change anybody's mind with this TV show. I just want to present life as it is, you know, and show characters that are flawed or honest. Like, I don't want to write a morality play.
Right.
Yeah. I don't want to write a morality play. And then they were like, great, we're all in tune with that. So then I went off and I came up with this idea. And then I came back with them and they said, this is good. Let's keep working on this. And we co-created and we kept working on it together. And, you know, we were really inspired by shows like Atlanta. We were really big fans of Atlanta. And aside from, and just like other comedies, especially movies. And then it was kind of dead in the water because nobody really knew me. I was getting kind of some accolades, like I was showcasing for Comedy Central. I was doing something for HBO. I did something for a few other, like, my name was kind of rising in the industry and getting buzz. But, you know, nobody really knows you when you're like, when you have industry heat. You're just kind of known in the industry. And then a few months had passed, and then they hit me up and they said, do you mind if we share this with Fred Armisen? One of our managers knows his manager. And I was like, yeah. But, you know, I thought that fool was not going to hit us up back. Like, I thought, oh, it's going to be like a month before we hear back from him. And then they hit us up and they were like, oh, a week later, he was like, he likes it. He wants to talk to you guys. So it was pretty cool. I had to like take I was still working at my warehouse job. I took my lunch break all fucking dirty with you know, like all sweaty, and I had a faja on, you know, like. Yeah, I had a brace on, and then I was like, I went to go talk to him in the car, and like I was in my lunch break, you know, and then I went back to work right after. But he was really nice. He just thought, like, I'd love to help you guys, and how can I help? And they go, would you be willing to attach your name and help us pitch it? And he goes, yeah, absolutely. So that was really cool. That's how he came on board.
I love it. I love that it's also Fred Armisen, because as someone who's a devout Saturday Night Live, you know, viewer, as a little girl, that he always played the Latino characters on that show, right? Like he was always like dancing salsa.
He's not Fred Armisen.
Right. He appreciates us, is what I was getting to. Yeah. I love that he attached his name, because that made the process go faster, right? Because George Lopez, when he got his sitcom, he wasn't going to get any leverage or any looks until Sandra Bullock attached her name to it. And so this, I'm trying to look at the formula so that more of us are out there telling our stories, because this is so funny. And you brought up how they asked you to write about characters. I love the women in your show.
Oh, like thank you. Yeah.
You know, like we are we come in so many different sizes, shapes, colors. Yeah. I mean, we're a Dodgers podcast, right? But we focus on LA culture, on tacos. Yeah. A lot of people outside of LA don't understand that we are, we're not a monolith, right? Like we are many. Yeah. And I don't look like my mom. I don't look like her mom. And so your characters, including Maggie's a good one, like the little bit of toxic relationship. Were you involved in the casting? And was it important to you that your mom and your abuelita didn't speak English?
Yeah, that was important to me. Like I was involved in the casting. So when I pitched, when I was creating the show with the showrunners, who I told them, I said, I don't want the mom and the grandma to speak English. And they asked why. And I said, well, mom, I'm like, you know, I was born here, but my parents are not from here. And if my mom didn't speak English, my grandma definitely didn't speak English. And then they were really open-minded. They said, perfect. Okay, cool. We'll do it that way. They actually thought that was interesting. You know, they thought, that's great. That's really cool. And then I said, yeah, I'll just talk to them in Spanish, and like they'll talk in Spanish the whole time. And, you know, I know some people who are like a few generations here, their parents speak English, and that's great. That's cool. But mine didn't. So I just wanted to be authentic to that. Also, it was just one of those things too. Like when it comes to the word representation, it's I don't really know what that means. I know what it means. I know what people are trying to say it means, but it's such a big word that it almost doesn't have a specific meaning, because, you know, when people say Latino representation, well, you know, my life as like growing up and where I grew up and my parents not speaking English and my mom was a janitor and my dad was a busboy and we grew up broke. That's a very different life from a kind of rich Cuban in Miami, you know, or a rich Venezuelan in Miami, or that's a very different life from a third generation Puerto Rican in the Bronx, you know, like, in terms of representation, I just thought, I'm not going to be worried about representing Latinos. I'll just be worried about representing my life, you know? And I think because when you try to think about it in a big scope, you're going to lose, because you're going to try to please a lot of people. You're going to go, oh, I'm going to try to please a lot of people by doing this. And I just thought, I'm not really concerned with that. I mean, I just want to represent what my life is and what the life of people who I grew up around is. And that's it. And I'm pretty sure. And we kind of looked at it more like through the lens of class. Like we were like, okay, let's look at it like these are working class people. And because I grew up working class, you know, so and I think whether it's in Spanish or not, people know what it's like to not be able to fix your roof and go put a tarp on the roof. Or if you have a parent who grew up working in facilities, like cleaning, like being a janitor, then you know what it's like for your mom to bring home toilet paper because she takes it from work because she wants to save money and stuff like that. So, you know, I think that's a thing that from a class perspective, it resonates with people.
That's like the episode cans, right? Like you're not poor, you're broke. Like there's a difference. Yeah. And see, and when I say representation, I just mean tell our stories.
Yeah,
there are
so
many out there. That's all I mean. Like it's,
I know what you mean. Yeah.
And I'm just so excited because I could relate to, I didn't grow up in South Central, but I grew up on the East Side. And I love that you have women that look a bunch of, like your sisters too, right? We just look like we're normal. We have kids. We're trying to make, you know, ends meet. We're trying to, but you do it in a way that's funny. And even your when you say you bring in characters that you grew up with, I love the race that you touch upon. And again, you're not being preachy. You're not trying to be, you know, pushy morality. It's just the way you grew up. And that's the way a lot of us grew up, but we never saw it on TV before. So like Devontae, right? With Thassos. Mm-hmm. Like I love that episode. You've got the Dodger jerseys. You've got the Laker jerseys. And of course, you've got the Raider jerseys. I'm going to hand it over to Juan because he's our Raider friend. I just love the way that it just, it's just authentic. And I would just want to thank you. And please let me know that there's going to be another season because I don't like the way it ended last season. You had me worried.
Yeah, we wanted to end it in a way where we would make ourselves worry, you know, because we wanted to scare ourselves and go like, if we end it this way, it'll challenge us to be more creative next season. And, you know, because if not, we want to make sure it doesn't become like a traditional sitcom where you're visiting, where nothing ever changes. And, you know, since it's more similar to modern comedies like Atlanta and Rami and stuff like that, those kind of comedy, we want to make sure that the world feels real life, where like sometimes things close down, sometimes people break up, sometimes people die, like things like that, you know? So
texting and driving, it's an epidemic. I mean, I'm that fangirl. I could go on and on about your shows. Like,
it really means a lot, for real. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. Juan, okay, I'm sorry. I could poke his brain.
Hey, that's the point. It's a carne asada. We're just kicking it right now. And Chris, you know, Alicia mentioned the authenticity. And to me, there is no more authenticity when you're telling a story about Los Angeles than when I see people wearing Dodger gear. Whether you are a fan of the team or not, you see people repping the Dodgers. Now, this is a Dodger-centric podcast. So I have a couple questions for you. First of all, are you a baseball fan, and is it the Dodgers? And how much of a fan are you?
I've been a little busy in the last few years with work, so I'm not keeping them up as much. But the Dodgers really played a huge role in my life. Like as a kid, I remember we used to go. My tío Nacho used to take me to Dodger games, and my tío Carlos like would take me to. And I grew up listening to the Dodgers through Jaime Jarin. That's how I grew up listening to the Dodgers. Like my tío, he would watch the Dodgers in English, but listen to Jaime Jarin on the radio, like watching it. So I have this strong visual of my tío listening, watching it muted on English, but listening to Jaime like sportscasting. So to me, that's like a big deal. That's always been a part of my life. Even from a kid, like growing up in Inglewood and South Central, we would catch the bus or my tío would drive us out to like Echo Park and we used to go eat. God, I'm forgetting the name of the restaurant. Do you guys remember that Mexican restaurant on Sunset that closed down years ago? But we used to go eat there before we would go see a game.
How far was it from the stadium?
You know, kind of more close to the corner of Park and Sunset, but it was on the same as some of the bars are. But anyways, it played such a big role. I grew up in the late 80s. So, you know, just seeing Fernando Valenzuela, like, you know, all that stuff became huge to me. And like, you know, I'm a big Dodgers fan and I'm in love with the history of it.
You know, you brought up a couple of triggers on the show here. All right. Yeah. I mean, we are a show that stands for Jaime Jarrín, and we stand for Valenzuela. And yeah. and you mentioned it right now because mm-hmm. I grew up in the 80s. Everyone on the show thinks I'm trapped in 1985. It's a very traumatic year for me. But I can't say this enough, especially maybe for people who aren't from here. I don't think they truly understand how a franchise, and in particular the Dodgers, because I think the Dodgers in maybe not by design, but they embraced the Latino more so than the Lakers. I think yeah. it eventually became that with the Lakers. But the Dodgers, to me, I think were the team in L.A. I don't know. Maybe the Raiders are the other exception. Mm. But you mentioned Jarrín. Like, this yeah. is Jarrín's last season. He's yep. he's retiring. And we want to give that guy his flowers now, right? Oh, because to it. Me...
Yeah.
It's a beautiful story, what you just mentioned right now. And that yeah. is how many people, the same way they did the English speaking public did it yeah. with Vin Scully. How many mm-hmm. people did that with Jarrín?
Oh, and all my tios did it with Jarrín. Like, that's how I grew up, like hearing his voice. Like, I don't know. It's just like, I'm telling you, it kind of gives me chills because my tio Carlos, who is not around anymore, but like sometimes I'll listen to Jaime Jarrín because it reminds me of my tío. You know, it's a comforting thing to me to think about it like that, you know? Or I just remember my tío taking even when we would go to games, he would have his radio. He always had a little mini radio that he would hear Jaime call the game live when we were there. So to me, I don't know. I just love that. And I think that has to do a lot with, like, you know, as Latinos, like to see Fernando Valenzuela, but also to see other, like, to recognize, like, Puerto Ricans that play in the game, to Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, Cubanos, and, like, just all other people. Baseball felt, I guess, inviting in that way, you know, I think to a lot of Latinos and, yeah.
So
especially in L.A.
So are you of Mexican descent or? Yep.
No, I'm okay. Mexican descent, yeah.
So let me ask you this. When your tío would take you out there, yeah. We had a recent guest, Julian Torres. We've baptized mm-hmm. the pavilion now El Palenque, so that yeah. that's how it's known to us. Where did mm-hmm. you sit when your tío took you to the Dodger games? Were you out there in the pavilion, or were you up at the top?
Oh, come on, dog. We were up at the top. We were up there in the top with binoculars.
Hey man, the top deck is a great seat, man. You have a lot of fun out there. But the other mm-hmm. one is Valenzuela, right? Yeah. You mentioned Valenzuela, and on the show, we're on this crusade to get his number retired, right?
Yeah.
They don't give out his number, right? Nobody yeah. wears it, but they won't retire it because he's not in the Hall of Fame. We've talked about this with many people. When you go into that stadium, to me, the majority of that stadium are Latinos. I mean, yeah, it's all Mexicans, right, in yeah. there and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Do you think it's disrespectful that the Dodgers haven't retired that number, but they'll give out bobbleheads for him and they'll yeah. make money off of him? But, I mean, to me, retiring that number means something. Like, listening to yeah. you talk about your uncle and Jarrín, that's yeah. what baseball's about to me.
Yeah, I think so too. So much of baseball is kind of memories, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, and you know what it is too? Also, like, even just looking at it from like a class perspective, like, baseball games have always been cheaper than basketball games.
Yeah.
Always. And you know, if you're just like, my tío was a jardinero, so it's like, that's something he can afford, you know, is to enjoy a baseball game. So I don't know. I do think it. Yeah, I wish they would retire it. I mean, I could see that being perceived as disrespectful. I don't know that they're intentionally being disrespectful, but I could see it could definitely be perceived that way. I think they should retire because, you know, I also read that, like, I don't know so much about this to be true, but I also read that, like, once Valenzuela came in the game, it changed everything. Like, yeah. it brought in an even stronger, like, you know, Mexican Americans who might have felt a little way about like Chavez Ravine at a certain time, mm-hmm. or you know, people who knew about that maybe had feelings about it when Valenzuela came in, it made them feel be a part of it a little more, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean I could talk to you more about the Dodgers, but I do want to bring it back to the show because mm-hmm. I think it's really funny that originally, I guess the show was called Punk Ass Bitch, and then you changed it to This Fool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you, I read your reasoning as to why you made that change. Did anybody give you grief for making that change?
No, not at all. I mean, because the grief was that, like, the reason was that to call the show that is kind of, it sounds like gimmicky to me, but it also presents like a binary. It makes you think that in the hood, you're either a gangster or a wimp. And you're not, that's not true. You know, that's very a black and white way to look at the world, you know? Most people are just regular ass dudes living lives in the hood, you know, like having a working class job. And they're not gangsters and they're not wimps. They're just, so I wanted to make sure that I didn't present that like, oh, either you're a gangster or a wimp. Like, cause you know, that's, you're just a regular dude if you're not that, you know? And I wanted to make sure to emphasize on that.
And to me, that's why the comedy works so well, in the sense that you are a regular guy. I mean, when I saw the show, he's a listener of the show, so he might get this reference. Shout outs to you, Shinebox. We refer to him as a cholo nerd, right?
Yeah.
Because he dresses like a cholo, but he is a nerd. He likes comic books and all that stuff. Yeah. So I feel a lot of the humor, especially the male representation and how you deal with the duality in the in those characters, is hilarious. I have to tell you, one of my favorite jokes, when someone referred to you as having a pompadour and you snap back at him and you say, it's a gentleman's cut. I was laughing so hard at my girl's looking at me. What's so funny? And I was just like, I have never heard gentleman's cut in a show before. And that to me, it lend itself to the authenticity.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much, sir. That really means a lot. Thank you.
Morrissey, right? Like,
And then the episode when the little boy thinks he's going to be in a gang, and it's West Side Story.
Yeah.
It reminded me of that episode. And I don't know if you're a fan of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, yeah.
But there's
yeah.
an episode where he goes into New York and he's dating a girl, and the son is, he thinks is it, like they're turning the son gay.
Yeah.
That to me, I don't know if that was an homage, but.
But yeah, we're big Larry David fans, and you know, a lot of that was like, you know, just being inspired by like good comedy like that, you know.
Yeah, and before I send it over to Alonzo, because you brought up Larry David, I heard that story about Seinfeld when Seinfeld came and saw one of your performances. I have to say, man, I'm curious to see what your reaction is, but to me, it seemed kind of like a dick thing for Seinfeld to do. But what is, like, if there's somebody up, like somebody that you've admired your whole life, and for them to just dismiss you or even like put you down, how do you overcome something like that?
You know, I didn't take it personal, because when he saw me, I was doing this show at the Hollywood Improv in their side room. It was called The Lab. And it was a challenge show. It was this show, like a gimmicky show, where you're not doing your traditional set, like a comedy. It was like you pull a challenge from the bucket, and then my challenge was to play the piano as I do my jokes, but I don't know how to play the piano. So I just started like hitting keys and saying the most dirtiest jokes ever. And then, you know, he walked in when I sat down. So he didn't know it was a challenge show. He had no context for me. So then when he saw me make an idiot out of myself, and then I got off stage and he got on stage, and I didn't even know he was in the room. He didn't know it was a challenge room. So when he said, what was that? That guy was awful. It made me laugh so much, because it made me think of that Seinfeld episode where George gets in a pool and his girlfriend comes in, and she sees that it's not as big as she thought, and he yells, he goes, I was in the pool. I was in the pool. It makes me think, like, I was like, Jerry, it was a challenge show. It was a challenge show. That's what it makes me think about, you know?
Well, that's good. I mean, that's a very positive way of looking at it. I just, when I read that story, I thought it was kind of like heartbreaking. And I just kind of looked at Seinfeld differently, where I was like, what a dick, dude. You didn't have to say that. Even if you thought, okay, it was awful.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to say that.
Well, you guys know the Curb Your Enthusiasm connection to the Dodgers, right?
Yes. Oh yeah, that documentary. Documentary.
Man, yeah. Hey, shout out to Juan Catalan. Catalano, he's amazing. I met that guy a few years ago at a comedy show, and I was like starstruck to meet him because, you know, being at a Dodgers game saved his life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, there is a documentary on Netflix about a guy who he was like accused of
murder.
Was it murder? It was murder, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he was in an episode. They were filming an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm taking place at Dodger Stadium, and they used the footage from that episode to prove his innocence. And that's really amazing. That speaking it's of what you also time. Worked. Yeah, you also work with Danny de la Paz, right, on La Ranfla.
Yeah, that's so funny you mentioned that. That was like a music video from years ago. Like, I have a buddy, this is years ago, like, I gotta imagine, like, almost 7 years ago. He hit me up and he was like, hey, do you want to be in this music video? And I said, yeah, sure. And that's when Danny de la Paz was in it.
I met Danny very briefly at a film festival, and he's an American Me. You'll recognize him if you see him. He was very generous to me. I had a film in the film festival, and he walked up to me and he was like, you did that? And I was like, yeah, man. And just like you, where you're just kind of like, hey, it's no big deal. You know, I'm just doing it.
Yeah.
But the fact that he, you know, took the time to acknowledge what you, I'm sure that's probably what you experienced, right? Walking around LA, people showing how proud they are that you've achieved success, man. They're rooting for you, right?
Yeah, people are really nice, man. It's overwhelming, like, in a good way. It's like overwhelming where people, what I like is people feel connected to it in a lot of ways. Like, people like the LA element of the show. Like, when people in LA, I was just performing stand-up in Tempe, Arizona this past weekend. And there was people who used to live in LA who came up to me and were like, I love that show. But also just people who aren't from LA or aren't from like similar backgrounds like that we all share, you know, all of us four. There's people, there was like, it was really amazing to see there was indigenous people in Arizona who were coming up to me, like natives who were like, hey, we came to watch you. We live on the res nearby. We got to tell you, we love this show. And that, like, you know, for them to, you know, reservation life is a lot different than living in a city like Los Angeles. So to hear that, that's like, yo, that's amazing. But also it means a lot when people are just like, oh, you did LA right. Or if people are just like, yo, my mom used to be a janitor and I love how you depicted that. And you didn't make it look, you didn't pity her. You didn't make her a hero. You didn't pity her. You just showed it like normal life. You know, and I love when people like that, you know, or when they like the humor. I mean, I'm a comedian. So when they think the show is, when they tell me that the show is really funny to them, like that, I mean, that's great. Cause the mission was to make the show funny.
Yeah. Thanks to you, Chris. I refer to everyone. Thanks to you. I refer to everyone as Playboy now. I go around. Yeah. What's up, Playboy? What's up, Playboy?
Yeah,
joining us here for a couple more moments is the only person I've ever heard refer to themselves as undefeated at being defeated, Chris Estrada. That's one of my favorite bits, that because I like how you tied the open relationship thing in into all that. Well done. That's a good bit.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate that.
I wanted to ask you the two things before we set you loose. One, because you do a really good job, like you mentioned, of tying in all the LA stuff. What's your relationship with arguably the best page on Instagram, Foo's Gone Wild?
Oh, man. Other than I think that page is hilarious, and I think the guy who runs it, Little Mr. E, is an amazing curator. I met him. He was a really nice guy. I did a show for Foo's Gone Wild at the Comedy Store that this really great comedian. If you guys get a chance, check out this really great comedian. He's from Long Beach. His name is Jesus Trejo. You won't regret it.
I love Jesus. Jesse.
Yeah. So Jesus is actually a writer on this on the show. He's a writer.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Bravo. Did not know that.
Yeah, Jesus is great. And Jesus hosted a Fools Gone Wild show that I was a part of. But other than that, I don't really have a connection. Other than I'm a big fan, and I'm inspired by them. And I'm also grateful to them, because look at that page. That's a page that has 2.2 million followers.
Yeah.
And it's that guy is doing. He's curating, and he's being irreverent, and he's being funny. But along the way, that guy, he doesn't hold back. He's doing positive things. He'll raise money for certain things, and he'll help out people. And he's also not afraid to call out things that he finds bad. Like, you know, he'll say racists are lames. And, yeah. You know, that's...
Yeah, if you're not following them, definitely go follow them. My favorite are the what city is this? Is this law? What is this representing?
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Or when you see a couple... He puts a picture of a couple, and he goes, "Where did they meet?" And you'll see people. My favorite is when somebody will put like panorama swap meet.
I also like when he does the Fooville news, like when they're doing the police chases, and he chimes in. Yeah, that's good. And of course, you know, so just the classics, the Don't Do Scante.
Yeah. Yeah.
And last thing, yes. Obviously, we talk about all things Los Angeles, right? Todo el barrio. We're about Dodgers baseball. We're about LA, but we're also about tacos. So I gotta ask you, where do you go get your? What is your favorite taco, and where do you go get that in LA?
You know, for a long time, my favorite taco spot was the original Teddy's Red Tacos over in South Central. The truck.
Yes.
That started it off. There was a truck on Slauson. Was it Slauson and Avalon?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Slauson and Avalon. And I remember one of my boys hit me up like a few years ago. And this was before John Legend knew about them, before they blew up, before they had like Super Bowl commercials. This was like a good 5-7 years ago. And he told me, he goes, you got to go to this truck with me. And I have a cousin who lives in Tijuana. So I already, like, I was already eating birria tacos, but you were only getting really birria tacos in Tijuana. Like, you know, that hadn't taken off that much here yet. So I went to try it, and, you know, the line was long. That fool gave you the little botito de consumel. Dude, I loved it. And then I love seeing that, because they became such a success story. They have like, dude, they got a Super Bowl commercial, and then they got like brick and mortars. They got one in Venice Beach. They got another location in Pico Rivera. Like, I don't know. I really love what they represent.
Their food rips. Their food absolutely rips.
I'm a champion of Teddy's. Ask these guys. Every time I bring it up, I bring up Teddy's. To me, there is no vampiro taco better than the one that Teddy's. Yeah. I mean, I try them elsewhere, man. They don't compare to Teddy's vampiro, man. That is like a hell of a taco.
Yeah, next level. Next level.
Chris, thank you so much, man, for the time.
I was asked, when I told some of my friends you were coming on our podcast, they got really excited, and I have two. So the Calimex market, where you take the hugs, not thugs, cupcakes, is that in Hyde Park?
Yeah, you know what's so funny? We wanted to, because the show takes place in South, or the neighborhood stuff takes place in South Central, and we couldn't get a supermarket in South Central at the time to let us film. So then we filmed it, and what's so funny is the director of that episode, I kept saying, people are going to know it's not South Central. And then he's just like, he goes, no, it's TV. Trust me, no one will notice. And then I go, dog, there's no hills. There's no hills in South Central. I go, you know who will notice? I go, fool, you're going to get me in trouble with LA Latinos. LA Latinos are going to know. I go, LA Latinos, because, you know, I did a show at the Laugh Factory, and some Latinos from South Central came up to me, and they were like, where's that Calimex? That's not, where is that? They were like, we're from South Central. We don't know where there's a hill in South Central. And then I had to break their heart and say, dog, I'm going to break your heart right now. All respect to Highland Park, but it's in Highland Park.
Yeah. But fools in Highland Park are super proud. They're like, that's the Cali mix. Yeah. So, you know, it's balance. It's balance.
No, it's a balance. But you know what? I love that we use that store anyways, because when do you get to see a store like that on a TV show?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You
know? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And really quickly, last one is the cholo with the nunchucks. So I have my theory. Can you please explain what it is? Because I'm probably wrong, but is there a cholo with the nunchucks in random shows and random scenes?
So let me tell you about him. He's the best. I'm actually looking him up right now. I know him through Instagram. So there, he calls himself Kung Fu, and his name is Christian Ballesto, Christian is his name. I forget his last name, but he's a very talented guy. He's just a skater homie from Highland Park, actually. And if anybody wants to follow him, he puts these amazing nunchuck videos of himself. He trained himself to how to do amazing work with nunchucks. His name is Kush St. Offerson, Kush Street Offerson. And he's... You know what it is? We wanted the show to feel surreal. Like sometimes we wanted to put weird things in there just for the world to feel surreal and different. And then I found him on Instagram. I also saw him on Fools Gone Wild. I saw him on his pages. He has 30,000 followers. So people would share his things. And I reached out to him on Instagram. And I was like, hey, dog, you don't know me. I'm a comedian, but would you like to be in a TV show? And he was like, hell yeah, let's do it. And we just put him in there. And he's amazing, man. He gets down. Christian is a G. If people can follow him on Instagram, please do.
I'm going to. Thank you. Thank you, Chris. Okay, I'll let you go.
I do like that his name is Kung Fu. Well done. Chris, where can people find you on the Instagram and the Twitter to find out what you got going on?
On Instagram, I'm at Chris Estrada Comic. And then on Twitter, I'm at Chris Estrada 85. And that's where you can see me, where I post about doing stand-up shows in LA or where I'm might be performing outside of the city. But also, just posting jokes and stuff like that there. That's where they can find me.
Go follow him like I'm about to, at least on Instagram, because I'm really bad at Twitter. But but go follow Chris and go check out This Fool. It's a really funny show. Like it's even if you're not Latino, you'll still understand the shit that they're talking about because it's just all emblazoning. So honestly, a great show. Keep up the good work and then hopefully we can see you for a second season.
Man, thank you guys, Juan, Alonso, Alicia. Thank you for it. Really means a lot to be a part of this. And R.I.P. Vin Scully. And, you know, shout out to Jaime Harin and everything he did for us, you know.
Hey, you're a friend of the carne asada, but now I think we're going to just refer to you as the playboy of the carne asada.
Hey, the playboy.
Hey, we're rooting for you, playboy. We hope you get a second season. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you. And shout out to the Highland Park homies. Hey, they got a
shout out to HP homies. All right. Looking out. Have a good one, guys.
You too, Chris. Thanks.
Bye Chris.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. Please subscribe and leave a review to the Bleed Lows podcast. The Bleed Lows podcast is a Dodgers Beat production.